still gonna have that conversation with my wife. Obviously, just found out here a little bit ago, so she's already told me to go. I'll see what the final decision is in the next day or so, but yeah, just if I do go, definitely honored to be a part of it. And it's a fun week, kind of one of those you never know what's gonna be your last, so I understand my wife's sentiments on me having to go to the game, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, definitely just an honor to be selected again.
Corbin Burnes, right after he found out he was going to be in the All-Star game, said his wife told him to go. Well, he is not pitching tonight, which he could have, and then pitched again on Sunday. That would have made him ineligible for the All-Star game. Instead, he's pitching tomorrow, and Brandon Hyde met with the media about 5 minutes ago. This is according to Matt Weirich, who joined the show yesterday. Says Brandon Hyde said the decision to start Corbin Burnes on Wednesday instead of today was about keeping him healthy and on regular rest, but also added, hopefully he's going to start the All-Star game. And that's great. And it's cool. Like, I remember as a kid when Steve Stone started the All-Star game, and I think he struck out the side in the first inning, and he won the Cy Young in 1980. But, like, I'd rather have Corbin Burnes, my ace, starting tonight and then Sunday against the Yankees instead of starting tomorrow and then in the All-Star game. But that's just me.
I would, but I'm assuming this was Corbin Burnes wanting this.
Yes. I don't doubt that.
Yeah, and I think you have to respect that. And I thought, you know, that was an interesting part of the quote that we came in with Corbin Burnes saying, hey, you never know when your last All-Star game is going to be. And look, Burnes is 29 years old. He's about to get a mega contract somewhere this offseason. We don't expect this to be his last All-Star game, but you never know. You never know in sports.
Could get hurt.
And yeah, in sports and in life. And I don't believe he's ever started an All-Star game.
Think so.
And he's got a chance to next Tuesday. So I don't fault Corbin Burnes for wanting that, if that's what he wants.
By the way, he's not the only team that's doing this. Imanaga was originally scheduled to start tonight for the Cubs. He's now starting tomorrow, in part so that he's eligible to pitch in the All-Star game.
Yeah, it just shows that we were talking about the Orioles that were snubs for the All-Star game and how, you know, for us and fans, it's kind of just, you know, I don't want to say funny talk, but for these players, I mean, it means a heck of a lot, especially some of those guys that would have made it for the first time, like the Jordan Westbergs, O'Hearn, Santander, all of those guys.
Sure.
It has to mean a ton. And heck, if you're someone like Corbin Burnes, it kind of starts to build your resume where this is someone that has a Cy Young already. He's already in a running for another Cy Young this year, where you're kind of building your candidacy.
I don't want to go full Jason here, and is off this week.
Oh,
but
you can.
But like, it does give me a little bit of pause, like the competitive juices. I'd rather my ace go tonight and then pitch Sunday against my rival, the Yankees, who I'm fighting for the division, instead of pitch tomorrow and then be in the All-Star game, a game that doesn't count.
That's just me.
I'd rather my ace and being competitive as I am, and I know it's cool, and I know it's fun, and the All-Star game's a big deal, and whatever. But I'd like my ace to pitch twice in this last week, and then he gets next week off and comes back, maybe pitches on Friday. I don't know. But now it's, if he does pitch in the All-Star game, what's he going? Two innings tops?
Tops.
Like, now it's like an inning, yeah, inning. That's what we do. Inning, like, yeah. I'd much rather have my guy pitch in the games that mean something to my team than represent my team in a fake game.
I totally get that sentiment, but I guess I don't know. I'm not going to get super fired up if that's what Corbin Burnes.
Yeah, I'm not going 205 scream.
Yeah,
but
no,
like,
205 scream.
But because I know this was his decision.
Yeah.
Like the Orioles didn't go to him and say, look, you know what? We'd love to have you pitch twice this week in the final homestand, but you know what?
Yeah.
Let's you pitch in the All-Star game, Corbin. That means more. No, I don't think that's the way that this went down.
Corbin Burnes has been everything that Mike Elias and every Orioles fan could have hoped for. And, you know, Brandon Hyde, his logic makes a little sense as well. If you're trying to give him a little bit of a breather as well, pitching less innings by only getting this one start this week, I get that kind of rationale as well, where we already know that this Orioles starting rotation has been hampered with injuries. The last thing this team could afford to have happen is Burns to go down with something, and he's hit the post every single time.
Yes, goes six every single
every
time.
Every single time he goes out
at
there.
Least.
At least. So I'm not going to get too up in arms about it.
Let me ask you this, Bone. He should be starting the first game after the break, shouldn't
Absolutely,
he?
Absolutely, without question, yes.
Like
100%.
This is not even up for debate, right? I don't care if he throws 20 pitches. Friday, July 19th.
Without question, yes.
He should be pitching.
Absolutely.
In Texas.
100%.
Three-game set. He's pitching game one.
What's going to be interesting, though, is what do they do with Grayson? Are they going to kind of finagle how that starting rotation lines up?
Give him a little extra rest.
Give him a little extra rest because, of course, Grayson's still young. He's going to be obviously exceeding his career high in innings. Are you going to try to kind of steal some there? Grayson's the one where I could see maybe he gets pushed back a bit in the second half.
By the way, some breaking news that may affect an Oriole. Alex Speier, who covers the Red Sox at Nesson, says that Rafael Devers will not participate in all-star activities in order to rest his shoulder. He's a third baseman. That would open up a spot for Jordan Westbrook.
Well, that would be something, going from three all-stars to possibly five. You're talking about Westbrook and then maybe Santander replacing Kyle Tucker. It's
and
possible.
Maybe Kimbrel replaces a guy that is not on turn for the becomes ineligible for the All-Star game.
I just kind of fault Craig
Kimbrel. He's getting in.
I fault Craig Kimbrel for not being tight with Rob Manfred.
Yeah,
he should have been on the commissioner's
list.
Yeah,
how did that happen?
He should have been hanging out with Manfred during the offseason.
Coming up next, the Orioles. It is 3 weeks till the trade deadline. They probably are working the phones. We've talked to multiple people who say that this thing's probably not going to start cooking until the draft, and that's July 14th through the 16th. That's what teams are prioritizing right now. But what are Mike Elias's deadline priorities? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
Well, that's something that we're evaluating in terms of, how we're going to approach this trade market. And, you look at our own areas for upgrade. It's not a big secret that would be on the pitching side of the equation, but it's driven so much by who's selling and which players are available and what are they asking for that we've got to learn more about the market, and it just hasn't taken shape yet. It's too soon, and there are too many teams in the hunt for that third wild card. I wish I could dictate that unilaterally. We're certainly going to be in communication with all the other teams. As I was saying, it is kind of early, and this new wild card spot, I mean, you look at the standings, there's teams in the National League below 500.
That, of course, is Mike Elias. He sat in with the Norfolk Tides broadcast a little over a week ago and talking about the trade deadline. And everybody knows what the Orioles need. It's pitching, it's bullpen, it's starting rotation. Now, obviously, things aren't taking shape yet, in part, as Bob Nightingale told us yesterday from the USA Today, that teams are right now concentrating on the draft, July 14th through the 16th. He says after the first 2 days, you'll see teams start to shift focus to the deadline. That takes us basically 2 weeks from the deadline. So the priorities, though, haven't changed, Bone. Like, would you like to get a right-handed bat? Maybe. But Austin Hayes has started to hit, so maybe your right-handed hitting outfielder isn't as needed. But pitching.
Yeah, I'm focusing on pitching. If they were to bring in a right-handed bat outfielder, that's kind of like a cherry on top for me. You need, at a minimum, a starting pitcher that can start game three of a playoff series, game three of the ALDS. And the guy that talked to Bob Nightingale about it yesterday, and I'm kind of getting more and more intrigued, is Nathan Eovaldi.
Uh-huh.
And I just think Eovaldi, he's off to another really good year this season in Texas. 3.10 ERA, metrics are really solid on Baseball Savant. He pitched in the World Series, started two games last year, has a lot of playoff experience. Has plenty of experience in the AL East. I mean, just a couple years ago, he spent, a handful of seasons in Boston?
Yes.
And he has a vesting option.
Yeah, for 300 innings over the 2 years in Texas.
2 years in Texas. It would be for $20 million in 2025.
It's a player option, so he could turn it down.
Yes, if he hits that 300-inning threshold, where right now he's at 87 innings pitched in 15 starts. Last year, remember, he banged up missing time, 144 innings. So probably on pace to hit that number.
Yes.
But Eovaldi would be that guy for me. Someone else, of course, we talk a lot about Eric Fetty, another right-hander where you have control through next year, definite club certainty, that is. $7.5 million, very affordable for a pitcher like that. And another name who at least is a lefty is Yusei Kikuchi, who is just a true rental.
And I don't mind Kikuchi with the caveat that that's not the only starter they go get.
Yes.
But I do like Kikuchi. I like the fact he's a lefty. I like the idea of him starting games here at Camden Yards in the playoffs. I am starting to be intrigued by the one-stop shop White Sox, Fetty and Crochet, and putting Crochet in the bullpen for the rest of this year, and then he's a starter next year, and then that sort of solves your starter problem with Fetty and your bullpen issue with Crochet, because you also assume that Suarez goes into the bullpen. He's another arm for the back end of that bullpen.
And twofold, Ken, because then Crochet next year is going to be in your starting rotation. So you kind of add two starters for 2025, one for this year, plus one to the bullpen. Now, I love that idea, but that's going to be costly.
Oh, it's costly, and I don't know what remember, the White Sox famously were insisting upon Jackson Holliday in a deal for Cease. That did not get done. They turned that down. What are they asking for Crochet? A guy that he's not – like, he's pitching like an ace, but everybody knows the innings issue with Crochet. Like, he can't keep this up the whole year. We know it. They know it. So I don't know if they can stand on their demands for Crochet like they did for Cease.
For sure. For sure. And I would be for it if you can pull it off. And you're going to have to give up one of your top four prospects, at a minimum, one of your top four prospects. And then
if Sam Basayo
others,
is the let's play hypothetical rabbit hole here.
Sure.
If they make a deal where they get those two guys and they trade one of the tier one guys and it's Sam Basayo, that means you keep Mayo, you keep Holliday, you keep Kerstad. If they trade Sam Basayo, what if Ryan Mountcastle's in that too?
Very possible, but
the tier one prospect, he's the one guy that goes. How are you feeling about that? Like, maybe it's Dylan Beavers, maybe it's a couple of guys.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it might end up being five players
for sure.
Like, but the one tier one guy is Basayo. Can you live with that?
I mean, I can live with it when it's those two guys coming back in return, but it goes back to the conversation we were having last week and the fact that I'm very interested to see how much this organization values Sam Basayo, knowing that Adley is DHing this much already, and you expect him to continue to DH even more as years go on. Where do you place emphasis in having that other stud catcher?
But that's a first world problem.
Absolutely.
If Adley Rutschman is supposed to be Adley Rutschman,
absolutely,
you find another backup catcher.
100%. And if that trade of Sam Basayo, then you get those two, and those two help you win a World Series this year, and Basayo goes on to become a perennial All-Star, I don't give a damn, because you get the World Series. You know, that's the biggest thing, where if you get the ring from parting ways with, if you have to part ways with one of those top four guys, and one of those top four guys is a perennial All-Star elsewhere, but you get that championship, I could care less. Because you got something that hasn't been done by this organization since 1983.
Yes, and I hadn't even been bar mitzvahed yet. It's been a long time ago.
I don't even know if my parents met that.
Yeah.
I don't think they did.
They probably
did. They probably did not.
Yeah, in 1983, my dad was on his first marriage. So, And he's been married to his second wife longer than he was to his first. So, just put that in your pipe and smoke it. But, like, I am coming to terms with the fact that you got to give to get.
Oh, I'm there.
They're at the point right now where it's a trade that's going to sting a little, But hopefully it's going to help you get to where you want to go. And there are no guarantees, especially this playoff system with all these rounds. And we saw last year, three teams won 100 games. None of them won a playoff series.
No guarantees, but in that hypothetical scenario, Ken, you get another bite at the apple with both of those guys next
yes.
year, which would be really, really huge as well. And you're already, if you're Mike Elias, you're checking off something on your to-do list this offseason because you're going to need to add to this starting rotation in a big, big way as things are currently constructed for 2025.
Now, Mike Elias has work to do. There's three
for
weeks
sure.
here that he's got to make legit improvements. This isn't Fuji in the general part two. This is not on the margins. And it's going to probably sting a little. And you also have to think about clubhouse dynamics. Because remember, the Mariners traded, was it Seawald a year ago? And it blew up the clubhouse. Like, you got to keep that stuff in mind. But you also got to think, you talk about backup catcher. Like, at some point, I envision a world if they don't trade him. Kobe Mayo's at first base, Jackson Holliday's at second, and Westberg's at third with Gunnar at short. Like, that's, and Adley behind the plate, that's your future infield, isn't it? So, like, you got to, I know they got to keep one eye on now and one eye on the future, so that's where I'm looking, not like, backup catcher.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously Bisaio, he's not even going to be on the roster opening day next year, but at some point you would expect him to debut next year.
You're also so good at drafting. Just draft, like,
that's
if you're so good, you there is a draft every year, and you don't get to pick as high every year, but you did get Gunnar Henderson late, you got Jordan Westberg late, like, there are guys, you've
Kobe
done
Mayo
it.
Kobe Mayo was a fourth round pick.
Yes.
Yeah, they've found guys outside of just their top draft selection each year.
Coming up next, we'll talk Orioles with our buddy Rock Kabatko. He just sat in with the skipper. Brandon Hyde spoke to the media. We'll ask him about the trade deadline. How's he feeling as it closes? And Corbin Burns, would he have started him tonight? We'll ask Rock next here on The Fan. Orioles and Cubs start a three-game series tonight, 6:30, game one. Baltimore Baseball tonight at 5:30. Bob Haney and Jim Hunter. And let's head down to a rainy Oriole Park at Camden Yards now, where Rock Kabatko covers the O's for Mass and joins us now. And Rock, thank you as always for joining us. I want to preface with, I'm not angry about this, but, and you can tell me I'm crazy, and that's maybe a different conversation, but if I'm the Orioles, I want Corbin Burns to start tonight and Sunday, not Wednesday in the All-Star game. Am I crazy?
It would be Tuesday in the All-Star game, so yes, you are crazy. But I digress. And again, you're crazy no matter what my answer is. I thought we
Yes, we have.
I mean, I could totally see the logic in that. And I thought they might go that route because it is the Yankees. But we asked Brandon Hyde about it. He said they discussed it, and they just decided they wanted to keep him on his regular turn and give him that little bit of extra rest. And, you know, you want him strong for the second half, yada, yada, yada. So you can look at it both ways. This would have been his turn tonight,
yes,
on normal rest. Now you get pushed today. So, and you get pushed again if he's pitched Tuesday. He does have an opportunity to start. And that's a nice honor, and he's only pitched in one of the four games that he's actually been selected to. And we're not 100% sure he's going to 10. We think so. We said his wife gave him the go-ahead, but she just gave birth to twins. So she has the final say, and I think we all understand that. But I expect him to go. But, yes, certainly having him face the Yankees would have made a lot of sense. Of course, the Yankees are free-falling right now.
Yes.
You could send out anybody. I mean, bring up Chase McDermott, let him pitch against the Yankees. Seth Johnson, what's the difference? These guys can't play. But yeah, that was something that they discussed and decided to keep him. At the end of the quote, Brandon said normal rest, but he obviously meant normal turn.
Yeah. Well, Rock, assuming Corbin Burns does go to the All-Star game, I guess, how do you handicap his chances of starting that game? And Oriole hasn't started an All-Star game since 1980.
That's young winner Steve Stone.
Yes, sir.
And then after it was over, the Devils said, okay, it's time. And that was for Steve Stone after that season. I mean, if you believe in that sort of thing, Steve Stone is the poster child. All right, let's blow out your arm and come to me. But first be a broadcaster in Chicago. But, I mean, Brandon Hyde said he's the best starter in the American League. I think there would be a very good chance. First of all, the numbers certainly. And also, you know, it helps with having the reputation. This is his fourth straight selection. He's a Cy Young winner. This would be an appealing guy to run out there, and I don't know who the primary competition would be. Crochet, like, I don't know who we're looking at, but certainly I think he's got a decent chance, and certainly he's going to pitch, even if he isn't starting. I would think he'd be one of the first guys to get in the game, but I'm sure that would be quite an honor. It has been a long time. I think Jim Palmer started four, I believe, and I remember one game as a kid where he didn't do well, and I felt like that was the end of the world, that the whole everybody was seeing him have a poor outing. It really meant nothing. When you're a kid, it's a big deal when your guy's getting lit up. And Jim would probably tell me it wasn't lit up, but I just seem to remember he gave up some runs. But, yeah, I think he's got a pretty decent chance to start, and it would be cool to see that.
We're talking to Rock Abatko. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Rock, when do you, and I know this is probably a question for your upcoming mailbag, so I apologize in advance for those who will read it, but when do you think we'll see Kobe Mayo in Baltimore?
I don't get any real baseball questions in that mailbag, so this is nice. Lasagna is not a casserole. Hot dog's not a sandwich. Boxer briefs.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for getting it back to baseball. We're going to see Kobe Mayo. I just don't know how that spot is created, and there will have to be a spot. No doubt that he's ready, and Mike Elias certainly has, in interviews, including on Norfolk's radio broadcast, made it sound like, you know, very close, seems to be ready. You know, it's when and not if. But you do have to create a spot. And, you know, defensively, there's, you know, still a work in progress, certainly at third base. After looking pretty good in spring training, he ran into some problems. But, again, you've got to figure out, what do you do here? It's Mateo or it's Arias, unless I'm missing somebody.
Yeah.
If there's no injury. And he's not an outfielder. So it's going to have to be an infielder. It's not Ryan Mountcastle, unless you're going to trade Ryan Mountcastle and give him every day at-bats. And that's a weird thing to do when you're one of the best teams in baseball and trying to win a World Series. That'd be a bold move to trade Mountcastle. But I feel like it'd have to come down to Urias or Mateo. Maybe they're competing right now, and they both bring their own things. I mean, Mateo plays middle infield, great speed. Urias plays everywhere, and is a Gold Glove third baseman. So neither one of those things are Mayo, but you look at Mayo's numbers and what he's doing at the plate, you got to make a spot for him. Right-handed bat, big-time power. But how do you do it? And that's something that, you know, will just have to evolve here over time. We're certainly going to see him. I just don't know exactly when.
It's something that Brandon Hyde's been able to do with Heston Kerstad this go-around, Rock. First time he got called up, played sparingly, where now he's getting some more consistent run. He's in left field tonight. What have you thought of Heston Kerstad in this week and a half?
Yeah, certainly looks a lot different than he did the first time, and I think this is the player we should expect. And, you know, he's looked pretty good against lefties, too. I think he's had a couple knocks against him, or at least one I can remember. But, you know, I don't know if they're going to be willing to play him just every day, because they do want Austin Hayes in that lineup against left-handers, and Hayes is swinging the bat better, or if it's going to be most of the time against right-handers. Clearly not every time, because I think there was a recent game on this road trip where he wasn't in the lineup against a righty, and I was a little confused about that, but they also want to play Kowser, and Santander is going to be there pretty much every day, and as we've talked about, Ryan O'Hearn plays every time there's a right-hander on the mound, so, you know, it's tough to find consistent at-bats, and Mullins for his defense alone in center field, but he's going to get a longer look now, and he's really taking advantage of it, and, you know, people say, you know, when the late kick and what he does with his hands, it's unique. But it works for him. And I talked to a scout for another organization, a National League scout, that said in our ballpark, he would hit 40 home runs, but he'd have to play every day. He's not a guy that you can put in the lineup once or twice a week. You just got to keep running him out there. So I think he said that pretty much, but, you know, the regular at-bats are benefiting him. It's hard for him because he's used to playing every day. He comes up here, you sit for 3, 4, 5 days in a row and then take your swings. That's an adjustment. So I think the regular at-bats are benefiting him. Now, of course, it's the old Buck Showalter thing. When a guy was struggling, he said, you know, if you played me every day, I'd hit better. And Buck said, well, if you hit better, I'd play you every day. So which is it? But in this case, he's really thriving.
Orioles and Cubs start a 3-game series tonight, 6:30, game one. Baltimore Baseball tonight at 5:30, Bob Haney and Jim Hunter. And let's head down to a rainy Oriole Park at Camden Yards now, where Rock Abatko covers the O's for Mass and joins us now. And Rock, thank you as always for joining us. I want to preface with, I'm not angry about this, but, and you can tell me I'm crazy, and that's maybe a different conversation, but if I'm the Orioles, I want Corbin Burnes to start tonight and Sunday, not Wednesday in the All-Star game. Am I crazy?
It would be Tuesday in the All-Star game, so yes, you are crazy. but I digress. And again, you're crazy no matter what my answer is. I thought we
Yes, we have.
Yes. I mean, I could totally see the logic in that. I thought they might go that route because it is the Yankees. But we asked Brandon Hyde about it. He said they discussed it, and they just decided they wanted to keep him on his regular turn and give him that little bit of extra rest. And, you know, you want him strong for the second half, yada, yada, yada. So you can look at it both ways. This would have been his turn tonight,
yes,
on normal rest. Now you get pushed today. So, and you get pushed again if he's pitched Tuesday. He doesn't have an opportunity to start. And that's a nice honor, and he's only pitched in one of the four games that he's actually been selected to. And we're not 100% sure he's going to attend. We think so. He said his wife gave him the go-ahead, but she just gave birth to twins. So she has the final say, and I think we all understand that. But I expect him to go. But, yes, certainly having him face the Yankees would have made a lot of sense. Of course, the Yankees are free-falling right now.
Yes.
You could send out anybody. I mean, bring up Chase McDermott, let him pitch against the Yankees. Seth Johnson, what's the difference? These guys can't play. But yeah, that was something that they discussed and decided to keep him. At the end of the quote, Brandon said normal rest, but he obviously meant normal turn.
Yeah. Well, Rock, assuming Corbin Burnes does go to the All-Star game, I guess how do you handicap his chances of starting that game? And Oriole hasn't started an All-Star game since 1980.
That's young winner Steve Stone.
Yes, sir.
And then after it was over, the Devils said, okay, it's time. And that was it for Steve Stone after that season. I mean, if you believe in that sort of thing, Steve Stone is the poster child. All right, let's blow out your arm and come to me. But first be a broadcaster in Chicago. But, I mean, Brandon Hyde said he's the best starter in the American League. I think there would be a very good chance. First of all, the numbers certainly. And also, you know, it helps with having the reputation. This is his fourth straight selection. He's a Cy Young winner. This would be an appealing guy to run out there, and I don't know who the primary competition would be. Crochet, like, I don't know who we're looking at, but certainly I think he's got a decent chance, and certainly he's going to pitch, even if he isn't starting. I would think he'd be one of the first guys to get in the game, but I'm sure that would be quite an honor. It has been a long time. I think Jim Palmer started four, I believe, and I remember one game as a kid where he didn't do well, and I felt like that was the end of the world, that everybody was seeing him have a poor outing. It really meant nothing. When you're a kid, it's a big deal when your guy's getting lit up. And Jim would probably tell me it wasn't lit up, but I just seem to remember he gave up some runs. But, yeah, I think he's got a pretty decent chance to start, and it would be cool to see that.
Talking to Rock Abatko, it's Inside Access here on The Fan. Rock, when do you, and I know this is probably a question for your upcoming mailbag, so I apologize in advance for those who will read it, but when do you think we'll see Kobe Mayo in Baltimore?
I don't get any real baseball questions in that mailbag, so this is nice. Lasagna is not a casserole. Hot dog's not a sandwich. Boxer briefs.
Yes.
Mean, okay, thanks for getting it back to baseball. We're going to see Kobe Mayo. I just don't know how that spot is created, and there will have to be a spot. No doubt that he's ready, and Michael Eyes certainly has, in interviews, including on Norfolk's radio broadcast, made it sound like, you know, very close, seems to be ready. You know, it's when and not if, but you do have to create a spot. And, you know, defensively, there's, you know, still a work in progress, certainly at third base. After looking pretty good in spring training, he ran into some problems. But, again, you've got to figure out, what do you do here? It's Mateo or it's Arias, unless I'm missing somebody.
Yeah.
If there's no injury, and he's not an outfielder. So it's going to have to be an infielder. It's not Ryan Mountcastle, unless you're going to trade Ryan Mountcastle and give him every day at bats. And that's a weird thing to do when one of the best teams in baseball and trying to win a World Series. That'd be a bold move to trade Mountcastle. But I feel like it'd have to come down to Arias or Mateo. Maybe they're competing right now, and they both bring their own things. I mean, Mateo plays middle infield, great speed. Urias plays everywhere, and is a Gold Glove third baseman. So neither one of those things are Mayo, but you look at Mayo's numbers and what he's doing at the plate, you got to make a spot for him. Right-handed bat, big-time power, but how do you do it? And that's something that, you know, will just have to evolve here over time. We're certainly going to see him. I just don't know exactly when.
It's something that Brandon Hyde's been able to do with Heston Kerstad this go-around, Rock. First time he got called up, played sparingly, where now he's getting some more consistent run. He's in left field tonight. What have you thought of Heston Kerstad in this week and a half?
Yeah, certainly looks a lot different than he did the first time, and I think this is the player we should expect. And, you know, he's looked pretty good against lefties, too. I think he's had a couple knocks against him, or at least one I can remember. But, you know, I don't know if they're going to be willing to play him just every day because they do want Austin Hayes in that lineup against left-handers, and Hayes is swinging the bat better. Or if it's going to be most of the time against right-handers, clearly not every time. So I think there was a recent game on this road trip where he wasn't in the lineup against a righty, and I was a little confused about that, but they also want to play Kowser, and Santander is going to be there pretty much every day, and as we've talked about, Ryan O'Hearn plays every time there's a right-hander on the mound, so, you know, it's tough to find consistent at-bats, and Mullins for his defense alone in center field, but he's going to get a longer look now, and he's really taking advantage of it, and, you know, people say, you know, when the leg kick and what he does with his hands, it's unique. But it works for him. And I talked to a scout for another organization, a National League scout, that said in our ballpark, he would hit 40 home runs, but he'd have to play every day. He's not a guy that you can put in the lineup once or twice a week. You just got to keep running him out there. So I think he's, and he said that pretty much, but, you know, the regular at-bats are benefiting him. It's hard for him because he's used to playing every day. He comes up here, you sit for 3, 4, 5 days in a row, and then take your swings. That's an adjustment. So I think the regular at-bats are benefiting him. Now, of course, it's the old Buck Showalter thing when a guy was struggling. You said, you know, if you played me every day, I'd hit better. And Buck said, well, if you hit better, I'd play you every day. So which is it? But in this case, he's really thriving now, it seems like, and this is a good excuse to play him every day.
Rock, Dean Kramer on the mound tonight. Where'd that split come from that he threw in his last start? That was filthy.
Yeah, it was. We never know what's good, you know, with some of these guys when they break out a pitch. What are we making a big deal about Kimbrel in spring training throwing just the changeup and then he never threw it again or something? We made a fuss because he threw like one in a spring training game. But yeah, all of a sudden Kramer's breaking out, you know, expanding his arsenal, and he's not a guy that's going to talk a lot about it, but it's something else for him. And I was surprised he came back with 5 scoreless after that layoff, and it wasn't like he had great numbers on his rehab assignment. I'd always try and take that with a grain of salt. He felt good. That's the most important thing. And it's a lot harder to set up minor league hitters. They're hacking at everything. It's not like you're facing a major league lineup and you can work certain guys. It is different. And I'm sure it's a little harder to get your adrenaline going when you're pitching in Norfolk as opposed to being on a major league mound against a major league club. But I was impressed by what he brought, and he's even more important, Captain Obvious here, to this rotation now without Means and Bradish and Wells. If you can get Dean Kramer really throwing like he's capable of as your number three guy behind Burns and Rodriguez, and then depending what they do at the deadline, you feel a lot better if you're looking ahead to playoffs in a short series. But, you know, Kramer's, you know, there's a bit of consistency. You know, you kind of get your hopes up if you're the Orioles about, you know, it's clicked and he can be a dominant type starter. And then he runs into some problems, and then obviously the triceps injury that came out of nowhere, but at least it wasn't an elbow. You know, they didn't have to call Keith Meister finally. I mean, the guy's on speed dial right now. So, but yeah, having an effective Dean Kramer is going to really be a big boost.
Those pitcher's injuries also press Cade Povich into action, and he got lit up over the weekend, Rock. Is that just an off game for you, or are there concerns moving forward?
I mean, there's always going to be concerns, just that not that you know, you need to send him down, he's overmatched, whatever, but just when you're a contending team and you're throwing this kid here for, you know, with a 6 major league starts, and you need a lot more pressure on him now because you can't afford to just experiment and let a guy get his feet wet when all these games matter so much. So there's that, but we've seen him before. He's looked a lot better. He said he wasn't attacking early, and it just kind of snowballed from there, and then he couldn't get it out in the second inning. I would hold off in the panic until we see like another start and see if he gets knocked out early again. If he does, then you can start thinking about what are the alternatives. I don't think there's an obvious alternative in AAA, for example. Well, this starter is banging down the door, bring him up. I mean, Chase McDermott's got the high strikeout totals, but you know, the walks are still concerned. His last outing, I think he went 1/3 of an inning, and they took him out because of his pitch count. So is he ready? I mean, then he's got even less experience than Cade Povich. So you really hope that he can work through this, but let's see what he does his next outing. But he took a beating there. He really, you know, once it started to snowball, and this is something a young kid learns, when it starts getting away from you like that, how do you slam the brakes on it, stop the bleeding, whatever cliche, he just was not able to do that. That's something he can learn over time. But how much time do you have, again, when these games matter so much?
Rock, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, and we'll probably ask you this every time you join us before the 30. It's just, how aggressive do you expect the Orioles to be as we near the deadline?
At least one starter, at least one reliever, if not more relievers. I mean, that's what I would expect, and I always stress that, you know, the effort is there, obviously, because I've talked to scouts that, yes, the Orioles have talked to us, and you know, they are trying to get a feel for which of the prospects are available and which aren't. The tricky part, again, as we've talked about, is deciphering who are the sellers and who are the buyers. And maybe it's becoming a little more clear for a few teams. But that extra wild card, man, if you're just hovering around 500 or you aren't that far out of first place or the wild card, whatever, then there's a hesitancy to go ahead and sell. So teams, the Orioles are still trying to identify the sellers, and these teams are still trying to figure out who they can get for Mike Elias, but they are making the effort. I'm not saying it's going to be a one or two starter necessarily, but I certainly think there's going to be a veteran coming that they can plug in somewhere.
Rock Kubatko covers the O's for Mass and Rock. Always great, man. Thanks so much for your time. And I'll text you later and ask you if the game's going to start on time.
Hey, it already had stopped raining. The sun came out, but yes, please do anyway. I love me some weather questions.
Yes, you do. Hey, Rock. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, coming up next, we switch to the Ravens, Bone. And Lamar Jackson, is the criticism unfair on Lamar Jackson? LeSean McCoy has some thoughts, and so do we next here on The Fan.
They don't talk about him like they talk about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, he lost this year to Patrick Mahomes. Who else is beating Patrick Mahomes? Joe Burrow in the playoffs one time? And even had a game. They should have lost that. First half was getting smoked. Remember the game?
They should have won.
First half, he was getting smoked, right? The Patrick Mahomes, the second half, started getting crazy with the ball, right? Joe Burrow was sacked, broke out of the sack a couple plays. All I'm saying is that for the way that we grade Lamar Jackson, it's crazy because he's doing the best he can. He can be better in the playoffs. I would give him that. He can be better in the playoffs. But a guy like Josh Allen, who I love, I think Josh is better than Lamar, just being honest, right? But I don't think we don't grade Josh the same way we grade Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Do we?
It's LeSean McCoy on FS1 talking about unfair criticism for Lamar Jackson. I do agree with the fact that I don't think Josh Allen is criticized the way Lamar Jackson is. And Lamar Jackson's won two MVPs. And the last time I checked, Josh Allen hasn't won any. And like,
no.
And neither one has been to a Super Bowl. Neither one has been able to beat the Chiefs. Like, it is weird. I do feel like, though, that there's a lot of Peyton Manning to Lamar Jackson's resume, an early Peyton Manning, and until he wins a Super Bowl, the criticism is going to be there.
We saw Peyton Manning have the one seed on more than one occasion and go one and done on more than one occasion. I believe Peyton Manning has been one and done the most amount of times in the history of the NFL playoffs. But there's some similarities there where, I mean, both these guys with the Heisman Trophy and a lot of success in the regular season, the MVPs. But, yeah, up until this point, I mean, it took Peyton Manning 2006 is one when he won his first Super Bowl. And he was drafted in, what, 98? So it took him quite a few years. But with Lamar Jackson, I just think there's so much vitriol that goes his way.
Good word, Bob.
Someone's got to use good words with Jason not here. Yeah. I mean, he brings up at least two or three words a show that I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Can I
he's the writer.
But I think that is because so many people didn't expect him to succeed at the NFL level. Certainly not to this level that he has through the first 6 years of his career. I mean, there are just so many narratives about him. I mean, his play style, he's going to get hurt every year. He can't throw force him to throw the ball 30 times in a game and then see what happens. Oh, well, when you're up two possessions, there's no shot a Lamar Jackson-led offense can come from behind and win. He can't win a game in the playoffs. He can't beat Patrick Mahomes. He can't do this. He can't do that. And he has dispelled a lot of those claims, but the postseason one lives, and it will continue to live until he gets over the hump and wins a Super Bowl. And he has come up small very often in the postseason. And that type of criticism, I think, is fair. But, gosh, people want to just dunk on Lamar, yeah. I feel like.
He has accomplished everything in the regular season that you'd want out of your quarterback.
Yes.
Two MVPs, two one seeds, two other years where before he gets hurt, they're in line for the one seed. He's won two playoff games, and he hasn't played great for four quarters in a playoff game. And until then, yes, there will be – after he wins a Super Bowl, like I think it's more when than if, but if you say if slash when, there will still be the lunatic fringe that will criticize Lamar Jackson. But like Lamar Jackson has been you think about all the quarterbacks that come in and are supposed to be franchise guys and have not come close to the success that Lamar Jackson has come.
Ken, look at his draft class in 2018. Yeah. The two guys that went last out of that bunch were the best quarterbacks in that draft. And Baker Mayfield going one. You had Josh Rosen. You had Sam Darnold. I mean, those guys did nothing in their NFL. I mean, Baker's, of course, he had a very solid year last year. Yeah. But
not great.
But, I mean, he's not with the Browns anymore, clearly. I mean, who drafted him? Those two guys helped transform both franchises. The Bills were a joke for how many years?
Yeah.
They made the playoffs once with Tyrod, but, I mean, that was the first time they made the playoffs since 99. They were irrelevant. And John Harbaugh would have lost his job if Lamar Jackson did not turn around that 2018 season. But it's not all on Lamar for the postseason. Look, we talked about the play callers with Greg Roman, Todd Monken. John Harbaugh has to wear some of this playoff futility because it's been since 2013. They won that one playoff game in 2014 and two with Lamar Jackson. Three playoff wins since their last Super Bowl.
Bone, we got a poll, correct?
We do. IA 105.7, the fans, how you can vote on this poll, every poll. Lamar Jackson always seems to be a polarizing player locally and nationally. Does Lamar need to win a ring to quiet the outside noise, or should the MVPs speak for themselves? 300 votes in, 66.4% has to win it all, 33.6% too much criticism for LJ.
Yeah, well, until he does in the postseason what he's done in the regular season, I think
it's going to be
the,
there.
Yeah, I think the criticism is definitely valid. Hey, we'll come back, hit the hot corner. Gives you the lineup. Also, Brandon Hyde spoke to the media about Corbin Burns and also said something about Jordan Westberg. Rafael Devers is not going to participate in the All-Star game, so that opens up a spot. Could it be for Westberg? We shall see. We'll talk about it next here on The Fan.
They don't talk about him like they talk about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, he lost this year to Patrick Mahomes. Who else is beating Patrick Mahomes? Joe Burrow in the playoffs one time? And even had a game. They should have lost that. First half was getting smoked.
That's a couple. Remember the game? They should have won.
First half, he was getting smoked, right? The Patrick Mahomes, the second half, started getting crazy with the ball, right? Joe Burrow was sacked, broke out of the sack a couple plays. All I'm saying is that for the way that we grade Lamar Jackson, it's crazy because he's doing the best he can. He could be better in the playoffs. I would give him that. He could be better in the playoffs. But a guy like Josh Allen, who I love, I think Josh is better than Lamar, just being honest, right? But I don't think we don't grade Josh the same way we grade Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Do we?
It's LeSean McCoy on FS1 talking about unfair criticism for Lamar Jackson. I do agree with the fact that I don't think Josh Allen is criticized the way Lamar Jackson is. And Lamar Jackson's won two MVPs. And the last time I checked, Josh Allen hasn't won any. And neither one has been to a Super Bowl. Neither one has been able to beat the Chiefs. It is weird. I do feel like, though, that there's a lot of Peyton Manning to Lamar Jackson's resume, and early Peyton Manning. And until he wins a Super Bowl, the criticism is going to be there.
We saw Peyton Manning have the one seed on more than one occasion and go one and done on more than one occasion. I believe Peyton Manning has been one and done the most amount of times in the history of the NFL playoffs. But there's some similarities there where, I mean, both these guys with the Heisman Trophy and a lot of success in the regular season, the MVPs, but yeah, up until this point, I mean, it took Peyton Manning 2006 is when he won his first Super Bowl, and he was drafted in, 98? So it took him quite a few years. But with Lamar Jackson, I just think there's so much vitriol that goes his way.
Good because word, Bob.
So many, well, someone's got to use good words with Jason not here. Yeah. I mean, he brings up at least two or three words a show that I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Can I
he's the writer. Yeah.
But I think that is because so many people didn't expect him to succeed at the NFL level. Certainly not to this level that he has through the first 6 years of his career. I mean, there were just so many narratives about him. I mean, his play style, he's going to get hurt every year. He can't throw force him to throw the ball 30 times in a game and then see what happens. Oh, well, when you're up two possessions, there's no shot a Lamar Jackson-led offense can come from behind and win. He can't win a game in the playoffs. He can't beat Patrick Mahomes. He can't do this. He can't do that. And he has dispelled a lot of those claims, but the postseason one lives, and it will continue to live until he gets over the hump and wins a Super Bowl. And he has come up small very often in the postseason. And that type of criticism, I think, is fair. But, gosh, people want to just dunk on Lamar, yeah. I feel like.
He has accomplished everything in the regular season that you'd want out of your quarterback.
Yes.
Two MVPs, two one seeds, two other years where before he gets hurt, they're in line for the one seed. He's won two playoff games, and he hasn't played great for four quarters in a playoff game. And until then, yes, there will be. Now what? After, and I'm going to say when, after he wins a Super Bowl, like I think it's more when than if, but if you say if slash when, there will still be the lunatic fringe that will criticize Lamar Jackson. But like Lamar Jackson has been like you think about all the quarterbacks that come in and are supposed to be franchise guys and have not come close to the success that Lamar Jackson has come.
Ken, look at his draft class in 2018. Yeah. The two guys that went last out of that bunch were the best quarterbacks in that draft. And Baker Mayfield going one. You had Josh Rosen. You had Sam Darnold. I mean, those guys did nothing in their NFL. I mean, Baker's, of course, he had a very solid year last year. Yeah. But
not great.
Yeah. But I mean, he's not with the Browns anymore, clearly. I mean, who drafted him? Those two guys helped transform both franchises. The Bills were a joke for how many years?
Yeah.
They made the playoffs once with Tyrod, but, I mean, that was the first time they made the playoffs
once with Doug Flutie.
Since 99. They were irrelevant. And John Harbaugh would have lost his job if Lamar Jackson did not turn around that 2018 season. But it's not all on Lamar for the postseason. Look, we talk about the play callers with Greg Roman, Todd Monken. John Harbaugh has to wear some of this playoff futility because it's been since 2013. They won that one playoff game in 2014 and two with Lamar Jackson. Three playoff wins since their last Super Bowl.
Bone, we got a poll, correct?
We do. IA 105.7, the fans, how you can vote on this poll, every poll. Lamar Jackson always seems to be a polarizing player locally and nationally. Does Lamar need to win a ring to quiet the outside noise, or should the MVPs speak for themselves? 300 votes in, 66.4% has to win it all. 33.6%, too much criticism for LJ.
Yeah, well, until he does in the postseason what he's done in the regular season, I think
it's going to be there.
Yeah, I think the criticism is definitely valid. Hey, we'll come back, hit the hot corner. Gives you the lineup also. Brandon Hyde spoke to the media about Corbin Burns and also just said something about Jordan Westberg. Rafael Devers is not going to participate in the All-Star game, so that opens up a spot. Could it be for Westberg? We shall see. We'll talk about it next year on The Fan.